Good morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD, the most awaited day on the Mary Griffith monthly calendar. By me and by the WTAD listeners is the day that Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz come by. And part of the reason is because you never know what these guys are going to do or say, which is always fun. Although today I have some outline and agenda, but it's just always great to catch up on them and see what's happening in their lives. So, Jack Freiberg, have you been traveling recently? Where have you gone?
I haven't gone anywhere. Going next month to go see my son in North Carolina, and I want to see the Biltmore because they have a Chihuly art show there at this time, and I want to make sure that I catch that.
Well, get to the Biltmore and get down in the laundry room, and you will see a box of soap manufactured in Quincy, Illinois.
Is that right?
There's also a lady who works there that is very high up in the maintenance department who's a native of Adams County. So use all your
Adams County leverage.
Adams County legend.
It's an incredible place, isn't it?
Yes. I've been
That's quite a tour.
I've been there over the Christmas time, and the Christmas
they
is so spectacular.
They redo the whole thing, don't they, for Christmas? We lucked out on that one year.
Yeah.
Becky and I were there for a Christmas tour.
Well, what's really amazing about it is they start before Thanksgiving, and it's all fresh. So they actually have to stop and take it down and put it up again because it starts to dry out. So it's amazing that the Christmas decorations are actually refreshened halfway through the Christmas season at the Biltmore.
It's an amazing place. And if you're going to do a judgment, you really need to be there at least 2 days to see everything.
Oh, I agree. And the thing about it is you have to go every season because the garden in the spring and then Christmas and then summer, you know, and fall when the winery is in full production and the leaves are turning. So I guess we'll just have to, let's just take the show on the road and we'll do it from the Biltmore, okay?
I'm all in favor.
Well, Asheville's a very cool town.
Yeah, too. Asheville is excellent, cool town. We had a great bus driver on the trip that Greg and I were on. We were on one of those senior citizen trips and we were leading it. And the bus driver goes, do you want to go someplace boring where tourists go or do you want to go to a good place? I said, we want to go to a good place. And so he took us down to this arts district. And we ate there, and then these ladies and men on the trip, mostly, you know, ladies were more interested than the men, but it was pretty fascinating. We went in and watched them do their actual handicrafts. It's kind of like a Maker's Mart area, and it was really, really cool. So the food was very good, and the whole thing was very good. So, you know, whenever you travel, get a local guide. That's what you need.
Absolutely.
To make everything.
And Maker's Mark's tomorrow on the promenade.
Yeah, they're going to open up the promenade.
At least part of it. Hampshire
to Maine will be open tomorrow for the Maker's Mark. I think they've got like 70 vendors that'll be there, including the cigar bar will be there. So
well,
you know
you can always stop in at 8 open and help yourself to a Mayor Schultz horseshoe.
This is something new.
Well,
I haven't been to
Eight Open.
I understand
it's a hot seller down there.
So they've named a sandwich after you?
You know, I consider it a significant career achievement.
Well, the thing with horse things that I could name for you, it wouldn't be horseshoe, but that's okay.
Well, Gary Farhaas had a burger at the Abbey for several years.
Oh, well, that's not fair.
So I feel like I'm kind of catching up there.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I don't have much insult to these locally named culinary passions that you guys have, but I'll certainly check them out.
Okay. We'll have to have the Jack.
Wait, well, hey, Jared Tipton's got a great thing going there with 8 Open.
Yeah,
it's great to see people downtown.
I've never gone in the restaurant, though. I need to get in there. Every time I go, well, it's closed because we won't go there. Anyway, Maker's Mark will be open. Okay, Jack Freiberg, Chuck Schultz are here. We're going to talk about the bicentennial. But first, I do want to start. Chuck, you teased this last month. And I've been kind of waiting for this to happen. And so please tell us the story about a member of your family, prominent Quincyan, as we say, who had a run-in with a criminal element. And I'll set it up at that, and then I'll let you take over, please.
Well, most people have probably seen the news that tragically a judge was killed in Kentucky yesterday, apparently shot by a sheriff over some sort of an argument. But, you know, at the courthouse, things get heated. And we have great security at the Adams County Courthouse now. But back in the day when my grandfather was practicing law, Richard F. Schultz Sr., that certainly was not the case. And his office was in the Blackstone Building, where five generations of my family have had offices. And he was walking across there at 6 in Vermont. In those days, of course, 6th Street ends now on Vermont. You'd run into the jail. But 6th Street in those days on the west side was angle parking. So as he's walking over to the courthouse, he gets called over to this car, this guy named Lonnie Fichter, who had a lot of mental issues. I think he'd been at Jacksonville. Remember in those days, sure. Jacksonville was where you went.
The state mental hospital.
And oftentimes when people are experiencing all sorts of stress from legal concerns, they can focus on the attorney as the real problem. You know, that's the guy that's causing me all these problems. So he calls my grandfather over to the car, and he's behind the wheel. My grandfather's standing there next to the open window, and he shoots him point blank twice in the stomach. Then he puts the gun in his own mouth and blows his head off. So my grandfather, and you know, Ralph Oakley and Mary Winters, God bless them, the Oakley-Lindsay families have done so much for Quincy, culturally, philanthropically, and the last thing they did with the Oakley-Lindsay Foundation was to digitize a Harold Wig all the way back, 1835 Bounty Line Register. So I, of course, have gone to look at the newspaper story about my grandfather, and it's a great story. First of all, he never went down. He was a tough guy. You know, people think of my father as being pretty tough, somewhat intimidating, although he really was kind of a, used the velvet hammer, unlike his brother, my uncle, the judge, who
King
was much
Richard.
More like my grandfather, was came on real strong.
Yes, my, yeah, everybody,
heart of gold, but,
everybody referred to him as King Richard, yes,
yeah,
we understand.
Well, his father was also... you know, very strong, intimidating type of person. Anyway, he never went down, but he stopped this passerby and he said, "Ma'am, I've been shot. Can you take these documents back? My office is across the street in the Blackstone building." And then a reporter came along and he said, "Can you get a police officer? I've been shot." So in those days, the ambulance was kept at the courthouse. So they got him in an ambulance. He rode to St. Mary's Emergency Room with the headless corpse of his assailant. They're both in the back of the same ambulance there. And, you know, my grandmother Schultz is an amazing person. She arrives at the emergency room and had just been talking to my Aunt Peggy in New York and telling her, you know, what happened. And she just tells my grandfather, "I just talked to Peggy. She's going to get the next flight out." And my grandfather says, "Tell her to pack a black dress." So he was not too optimistic, and he almost died. But Dr. Greenbank and Dr. Rapp, both of whom apparently, remember, this is 1961, not that far removed from World War II, and most physicians had gunshot experience. So they just ripped him right open and saved his life. One of the bullets remained in him. It was close to his spine. And he lived until 1975. And as kids, we enjoyed, he would let us feel the bullet in his back, and it moved around a little bit underneath the skin. So not too many kids had a grandpa that had a bullet in his back like we did. But, you know, you can imagine, but for a 8-year-old little boy, that was a very traumatic thing for me. I came home for lunch. We used to go home for lunch. You know, I don't think hot lunch started till Lyndon Johnson, maybe, like 64, 65. Anyway, and I lived close to school. Lived on 24th Street, went to St. Peter's. So you go home for lunch, have lunch, and then if you made it back in time for a little recess, and then the afternoon. So I go in the back door, and my mom was crying at the kitchen table. Never seen my mom cry before. What happened? Grandpa got shot. It's like, shot? You know, it's hard to compute. You know, that doesn't happen in real life. But he did. And best part of the whole story for me, the thing that's unforgettable is, the next day, we all went, all seven little Schultz kids, to St. Mary Hospital to see my grandpa. And my grandfather was on the board. He was the lawyer for the hospital. He'd been chairman of the board, as my father had too. And so now this is Broadway back in 1961. It's a two-lane street. We parked on Broadway. You could park on Broadway. And St. Mary Hospital was a brick building on Broadway, just getting ready to do the John Bunyan steel and glass on Vermont. So we're not allowed to go up. They send us all back out. So we've got seven little kids in their Ford Country Squire station wagon there on Broadway waiting for mom and dad. And I'm in the middle seat right on the sidewalk, and I spot my grandpa coming up the sidewalk in his bathrobe. So he comes up to the car. And remember the old roll down the windows, you know, I'm rolling down the window. And he walks up right in front of me, and all the kids in the car, you know, craning to get a good look. And he looks down at us, grabs that bathrobe, and he says, "You want to see my bullet holes?" And he opened, you know, it's all bandaged and everything, but he had a very impressive scar. And that's some kind of ingrained, you know, now that image is something that will always be burned into my memory bank there. But my grandpa was a great guy, lived until 1975. But it does, you know, we have excellent security, like I said, now. But these things happen, you know, like what happened tragically in Kentucky yesterday. You know, Tom Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture, former governor of Iowa, he was corporation counsel of the town of Mount Pleasant when somebody came into a council meeting, shot the mayor, killed him. And then he became the mayor and then state senator and then governor. But in this day and age, you know, people react emotionally and not rationally. And, you really have to be concerned about it. And anybody that's been in the legal profession knows what I'm talking about when you're dealing with matters that affect somebody's livelihood.
Well, and you can't protect, I mean, you can have protection at the courthouse, but you can't protect people all around everywhere they go. And you're right. It's so interesting. So what was your grandfather's name? Was it
Richard F. Schultz?
Richard F. Schultz.
Richard Ferdinand. Ferdinand is our family name going back to Austria.
Okay.
Chuck, do you know what their dispute was about? The backstory?
Not really. I don't think it involved his going to the state mental hospital. I think it was some other, you know, my grandfather was on the other side of something where people were trying to get this guy to do something he didn't want to do. But yeah, it just became all consuming, apparently really sad.
Well, thank goodness, like you said, now it's a great story to tell about the bullet in the back and all that, but, you know, it could have gone the other way. I want to get your commentary on two things. Number one, your commentary on the fact that, you know, it really is scary what's happening in the world. We're going to talk about the presidential issue here in a moment, but, you know, targeting Supreme Court justices, targeting federal judges. You've been around the law game for a long time. Is it scarier now, or were these threats always there, but people didn't know about them, or now with social media we do? I mean, is it scarier now when people say, I don't want to be a judge? I used to be like the pinnacle. Man, after a great law career, I want to get appointed to the bench.
I think it is more of a concern to now. On the other hand, security is much better than it was. Obviously, the need is there. You know, I went to Chicago and for the first night of the convention because Senator Durbin was speaking. He invited me as his guest. And I'd been to the United Center in 96 for that convention. And, you know, you didn't walk right in, but it was pretty easy to get in. This thing, you started about six blocks away where they let you out of your cab, and you go through about four or five checkpoints. It was all really well organized and moved right through. But, yeah, security nowadays, I mean, if you go to Washington, obviously, you just can't move around like you used to. When you know, I was a college kid out there. You could go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I tried to get into a Bulls game once. The hardest thing was getting a ticket. But that's okay. Somebody who was on the aftermarket was able to supply me with a ticket at extreme cost. Jack Freiberg, let's talk about we're definitely going to get to the bicentennial. We've got this book to promote for sure. I want to get your thoughts on what's been happening with two assassination attempts against President Donald Trump. Is it impossible for the Secret Service to protect somebody who wants to be out and about and doing things? I don't want anybody that has to run for office to have to be put in a bubble. You want them to have a life, but at what point in time can you say, we can't possibly keep you safe?
Yeah, I went to a Polis class last week, and Michael Lumler was there, and he was an advance man for Obama and for Clinton. Obviously, he had moved up a lot in that period of time. And he talked to us a little bit about those two incidents. And frankly, he couldn't believe that they happened. You know, the one incident had happened then. The other one obviously just happened this past weekend. But he really couldn't believe that somebody had gotten within 145 yards of him. And frankly, almost anybody that is familiar with shooting a rifle at that kind of range will tell you that that is a fairly easy shot.
So do you think the guy... did he deliberately miss Trump? I mean, why? I'm glad he did. Don't write. I mean, but he winged his ear. My God, we're talking millimeters
yeah,
between death and survival with just some blood on your face. So was the guy a bad shot? Was he nervous?
I don't know.
We'll never know.
That's just it. I don't think we'll ever know. But the reality of it all is it's very easy for the average hunter to kill a deer at 145 yards with a rifle. And, you know, that's the part that's most amazing to me as to why those buildings weren't secured.
Well, but how do you protect a president who wants to golf at his favorite golf club when there's a what's that called? A chain link fence is the perimeter thing. So, Chuck, weigh in on this.
Well, I was, of course, involved with President Clinton's visit to Quincy. In fact, I have the Secret Service briefing book. I donated it to the Quincy Public Library. It's in the Illinois room. But if you want to look through there, it's very interesting. And the after review on what happened there at the rally, just shocking to me because of what they did here for the president. They covered every rooftop. They turned Washington Square, you know, the four corners became where the metal detection was, right. And they secured the entire square
and
every
Secret
building.
Secret Service here on us with dogs. They're putting dogs up in the roof here in this studio. We were not allowed to talk about that on the air when it was happening. They came in and you know, these dogs were everywhere. They're walking around on all our equipment. They were up in our roof here on the first floor, and they were in every part of this Lincoln Douglas. And that was for the who was that that was visiting? I can't remember who that was. But anyway, we've had several presidents come to Quincy. So
very unfair to blame the locals. It's the Secret Service responsibility. The locals do whatever they tell them to do. And, you know, it was the locals that saw the guy up there. And so how that could have been missed by the Secret Service.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, they probably have to do an after-action review for the whole agency.
I had a Johnny warmer, which is a little hand warmer that was, runs on lighter fluid, and it's completely harmless because that day, as we all remember, was pretty frigid.
It's really cold, yeah.
And when I was going through and they patted me down, they seized that from me, and that was the last I ever saw of that little thing.
At least he did make the list. You know, they have that list of all the crazy people in Quincy, and it's extensive, but Jack slipped by on that. I may have told this story before, Mary, but that day while we were on the plane on the way out, the head Secret Service guy gave me this lapel pin. And he said, Mayor, you can go anywhere you want today. You got this pin on. You don't have to worry. Go anywhere you want. Get right with the president. And so, that's great. So, you know, I got my little briefing with the president up in the forward cabin, got the whole thing. And I had mentioned to him, because he wanted to know the history of Quincy, so I could not leave out Father Tolton. And I said, we're going to come in on Main Street. We're going to go right by a statue of Father Tolton in St. Peter's Church. So on the way back, he stops the motorcade at St. Peter's so he can see the statue of Father Tolton. Well, couldn't really see it. We didn't get too close to it because Main Street was blocked off. But as you know, you can get into St. Peter's parking lot off of 24th Street through Madison Park. And it was all live on Channel 10. And so they were just pouring in there. So they stretch out that rope. And there's one guy on either side, just like Jack said, and they're looking at everybody's hands and whatever. Well, the limo is crawling along with him, and the back door to the limo and the doors on that limo, you cannot believe how thick those doors are. You can bounce a missile off those doors. So it's crawling along, and I'm with Clinton because I know a lot of these people, and hey, I'm shaking hands too and great and whatever. And this same Secret Service guy comes up to me and grabs me. He said, Mayor, I know I told you could go anywhere, but there's one place nobody can go. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. He said, that's between that open limousine door and POTUS. Nobody, because if something happens, they literally pick him up, throw him in there. They had a surgical suite set up at Blessing Hospital with his blood and everything else.
Yes, they had blood supplies and everything on hand.
Speaking of blood supplies, and you have been great, you know, over the years for promoting donation of blood. Mary has been number one in Quincy, and I have benefited from that. Well, when my grandfather was shot, he almost died. He lost so much blood, and lawyers in Quincy went down to St. Mary's and donated blood. You know, in those days, we didn't have the big blood bank and everything. And so, you know, many of his colleagues were down there rolling up their sleeve to give him blood. And for years, like one of them was Lauren Schnock, well-known Quincy lawyer and judge. And he would see my grandfather and say, "How are you doing today, Mr. Schultz?" He'd say, "Oh, I'm not feeling that great. I got some bad blood somehow. I got some Republican blood in me. I think it's a Lutheran, too."
Republican Lutheran blood has contaminated the Schultz family. I love it. Well, we've got to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a way that you and your family, your church, your business can get involved in this bicentennial booklet that's coming out, this commemorative book. But first, we're going to head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. We're going to take a look.
Proud sponsor of the bicentennial.
Yes, yes. And they're sponsored every, yes, thank you. And Purple Wave also brings them. And there is a very important military man coming to Quincy to give a talk. So here's a little bit of information about that before we get to the folks at Purple Wave and the livestock report.
Did you?
Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show, brought to you by Refreshment Services Harvest Ridge Coffee. And we are talking today with Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz. If you missed it and you're tuning in late, get the podcast, because Chuck Schultz has told about his grandfather being shot twice in the stomach by a deranged criminal type when he was a judge here in Quincy. He did survive, thank goodness. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Adams County Bicentennial. There is a chance now for everyone to tell their story. And we've got a whole bunch of dates coming up at different points in Adams County. The libraries are coming together to collect artifacts, oral histories, stories. And so
they won't take them. They'll scan them and give them back
right.
to you. So don't worry about losing a photo or an old family story.
But next Wednesday night, September 25th, it kicks off at the Golden Library from 6 to 7:30, then goes to Wednesday, October 2nd at the Four Star Library in Mendon, Wednesday, October 9th at the Clayton Library, and Wednesday, October 16th again from 6 to 7:30 at the Camp Point Library. Of course, Quincy Public Library is also participating on a more regular basis. They're going to scan all this material, take all these pictures, you take all your photographs, your clippings, whatever. And then they want to get your oral histories as well. And this is all going to be put into a book. Now, there's a chance for you to have this bicentennial history book. Do you have this in front of you, Jack? Do you need this for a...
Yeah, I do.
You do need it. Okay, Jack's going to tell you about how you can get a page or a half page in this book. And again, they're going to put things in the book that, you know, you don't necessarily have to pay for, let's say. But if there's something special that you want included in the book, or your business wants to be highlighted in the book, or your church, you can buy like an advertisement, I guess would be what it would be called.
What it's meant to be is a comprehensive look at Adams County and Adams County history. And in other words, if you've got a little country church that goes back way early in Adams County, that's doesn't have very many members, but usually those members are incredibly dedicated. That's the kind of story that we want to hear for this book, where someone writes their history. A full-page ad costs $300, a half-page, $200 for a business, club, organization, a memorial. A church or a school, the full-page is $150, and the half-page is $100. So there's a little bit of money that's involved in this. But the idea being is we want to hear your story, and as comprehensive as we can be on this, the better. Obviously, there will be some editorial items that are at the discretion of the publisher, but I'm telling you, this is an opportunity for us to put together a comprehensive look at all the institutions in Adams County. And I don't know when we'll ever get a chance to do this again.
It'll be a very nice bound volume, I think $49.
And, right, there are advanced copies that will be sold for a reduced price, and then of course there'll be a run of those, and then they'll sell them, and if they're sold out and there's enough demand, they might make a second run, but they might not. So that's why procuring your copy in advance is not only economical but desirable, because you don't know how much of an overrun you're going to have.
And we have some great stories to tell, and tremendous. You know, we've mentioned on this show before that we're honoring all the family farms that have been the same family for 150 years or more, sesquicentennial farms. I thought there'd be half a dozen. There's almost 100. And if you want to put that family history in here, this will be a way it's preserved forever. It's really awesome. There's another book coming out also that I wanted to mention, Mary, and it's ready to go. It's going to be sold this fall for this Christmas. And that's Sketches of Adams County. And those have been compiled by the Historical Society from those Sunday history columns in the Herald Whig. So you're going to have some Iris Nelsons in there, Reg Ankrum, going back to Carl Andrew.
Hey,
we've
got two Jack Freibergs in there, too.
All right. All
a pair of Jacks. That keeps the full house.
That's exactly right.
Arliss, Dittmer, all these great writers over the years. I just saw the cover. It's a wonderful picture of John Wood. So that'll be available this fall. And then if we get all of our work done on the Adams County history, that'll be in the fall of 25 available for Christmas.
So that'll be great. So again, Christmas gift giving for folks who have moved away. These nicely bound sets are great. Does it go back all the way to Carl Landrum's day?
Yes, and you know,
wow.
The public library has a treasure trove, not just Carl's columns and research. They got all of his photos. He had quite a photographic collection.
This is the one thing, and you mentioned it earlier, the Herald Whig, when they were under local ownership. I was on the Mary Williams Barton Foundation for a year at the public library for years. And one of the things we always wanted to do was digitize. And, of course, we couldn't come up with the cash to do it, but the Herald Whig graciously, and they would take a decade at a time, and they would just work on that. We'd work on that, and then they'd infuse more money.
We were up to about 1926, I think, and ran out of money.
Yeah.
But what they did, Mary, they went back and started over because the technology is so much better now. So they went all the way back to the Bounty Line Register, and now it's all there. And as you say, you know, in the days when the Herald Whig had, I don't know, 30-some thousand circulation.
Oh, yeah.
And you had people covering the arts, education, business, government, sports.
It was a women's
entertainment,
page.
The women's page. I mean,
and Mrs. Charlie Griffith. My mother, nobody was ever identified by their first name. You know, it was never Evelyn Sakadak and Gina Griffith got together for a League of Women Voters voter registration drive. It was always Mrs. Charlie Griffith and Mrs. whoever,
Bill
you know,
Sakadak.
Bill Sack, Mrs. William Sakadak, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just fun
Evelyn,
to look
Evelyn
back.
Evelyn would not have appreciated that.
Well, and that was what was so funny about it. Here were these, it was the women's page, and here were the League of Women Voters who were trying to bust out of the women's page coverage and be dynamic people in our community. And they
now, Mary, you mentioned the Library Foundation. I know you've been a great leader on that. And we have been trying to promote donations to preserve our beautiful Quincy Public Library. We're looking out the window across the street.
The Historical Society now owns that at 4th and Main. They're putting a elevator in.
And we need money.
Yes.
So I was thinking of all the great women that have led our library over the years. And you and I, you know, we worked with Nancy Dolan and Sue Beach. Sue Beach was Jesse White's favorite librarian in the whole state of Illinois.
How did you come up with that info?
But, Jesse would, he had a great program there for after school kids that he did with Sue. Because as Secretary of State, you're the state librarian.
You're the state librarian, yeah.
So that reminded me of Carolyn Sexhauer.
Yeah.
Long time librarian, and you know the old story of it. Someone was looking for her one day, and they called the library, and they said, "Do you have a sex hour there?" And they said, "Sex hour? Are you kidding me? We don't even get a coffee break." That was one of my dad's favorites.
Again, when you hear the promo writing, Mary doesn't know what they're going to say. This is the thing. Don't send me letters.
How can I resist that if we're talking about the library?
Gosh. So let's get back to this book. Okay, we've got a book coming up that'll be ready for this Christmas, which is good. Now I know what to give my baby brother. Okay.
There you go.
For Christmas. By the way, you'll be happy to know that the Charlie and Gina Griffith Foundation has contributed to the elevator.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
Terrific.
Yes.
Thank you so
through
very
the community
much.
Well,
I got
Mary?
Yes, through the Community Foundation. We got a lovely thank you note. It's so nice to get a thank you note when you give money. That art is being lost.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that, but anyway, maybe I just should give more money.
No.
Or maybe give higher now.
Thank yous are the way to go.
But anyway, you know, my brother and I have to disperse this money every year, and we try to think what would Mom and Dad want, and now that Dad would be 100, I know he would want an elevator because Mother was always dragging.
Because that's people going up those 24 steps inside there, it's intimidating.
Yeah, well,
and that's why, you know, last week when we had the Camp Ellis program, which was frankly fascinating, we've lately been having these at the senior center.
But, well, yeah, and you know, even that may, they've become so popular and so big, that may even have to continue.
But at the top of those stairs was Marty Ward in the children's department, yeah. A wonderful, magical place up there. And if you're like me and you benefited from that and you're listening to this broadcast, you could make a contribution to preserve that building.
Yeah, the easiest way to do that is to just call 217-222-1835. Talk to Susie in our office there, and she'll get you a pledge card and a fact sheet about the project.
Or you can just put it on your credit card that day if you're ready
exactly.
to go. Now, back to this book. We have got to – is it time to pre-order for this book, or is it time to really start getting the stories for this book, Jack?
I think there's more emphasis right now on getting the stories, although obviously paying the $49.95 is a discounted price. And I'm sure that they would take any of that, you know.
Well, yeah, because
even
though
now.
The book may not be available for a year, the bottom line is you want to make sure that they run enough copies. Because again, you know, they'll have a run, but then a second run is very costly, and so it may not be financially worthwhile. So you may only have a first run. So if you want to be in on it, you better get in on it.
Yeah, and I really think it's going to be a very popular book. I really do. And one of the ways that it's going to be popular is for you to tell your individual story of your church or organization, what have you, and get that in there. Because if you're interested in it and proud of it, I can tell you there's going to be more people here in this county that are going to feel the same way.
Okay. So Adams County Bicentennial, there's some kind of website or something. Can you give that to me exactly?
Yeah, it's, let's see the side here.
I have no idea, of course.
Yeah, and the, one of the easiest ways to make contact with folks, if you're going to submit stuff, is to take it to your local library.
Take it to the local library is the best way, and they'll scan everything like that. Well, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll have that information. And the last moments with Jack and Chuck for this month, it surely has been a great treat whenever they stop by. We are back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We've been talking about the ruler, the timeline of Quincy. Not only is it going to be on a ruler, but they're going to have a big timeline at the Adams County Courthouse, I think.
Correct.
It's going to be put up in some kind of granite or probably not bronze. That's too expensive, but something's going to happen there.
It's going to be a monument on the courthouse lawn, and then we'll have a wraparound semi that will have the timeline of Adams County history. And that will go to the Liberty Fall Festival, Clayton Old Settlers, Adams County Fair, wherever people are going to be. We hope to have a little mobile museum go with that. So the folks at Quincy Museum and like Katie Krauser, our friend from now at QU, they have some cool stuff that they could display. So, we kind of got to take it out to the people. I don't think you can expect everybody to be able to make it to 16th and Main, so we'll take it to them. And there are some very cool artifacts, including perhaps the spittoon that Mark Twain kicked out the window right into that intersection at 4th mm-hmm. and Main, the dented spittoon.
Because he was awakened early by the chambermaid.
He was awakened too early, and that is now in the Brenner Library collection at QU.
You know, Monica's blue dress didn't make it into the Clinton Museum, but if only we had John F. Kennedy's coat when I threw up on him, wouldn't that be?
Wow.
You know,
and they
but
could probably
I'm sure
still
that went
get
to
some
the
DNA
dry
off
cleaner.
Of that. For, you know,
I'm surprised there's not a press photo of that somewhere.
Oh, there probably is a press photo of it in my personal family collection. I just haven't found it yet.
I saw Kathy Cramsey yesterday, and I said, you got to get me the picture of your father, Mel Cook, and John F. Kennedy that was taken right there. I'm looking right at that spot on the sidewalk outside this
window. We should have a placard there. Here stood JFK.
Well, we're going to have something to mark presidential visits. Of course, he wasn't president when he came.
Right. I threw up on him, not when he was president. That's
if,
true.
If you want to learn more about the Adams County Bicentennial, the website is www.AdamsCO200.org. Again, that's www.AdamsCO200.org.
And eventually all this will go on that website. So when you're looking at that ruler and it says Robert Gardner patents the Gardner steam engine governor, 1860, what is that? Well, you can go on the website and we'll read all about Robert Gardner.
Read all
Gardner.
About the Gardner steam, the revolution. All roads lead to Quincy. That's why when you go to the Biltmore, Jack, look for the soapbox. Ask for the lady who's from Adams County that works in maintenance there. She'll maybe give you a little extra special tour. And don't spend too much time in the winery, Freiburg, okay? Try to stay more in the architectural aspects of the Biltmore, not the ancillary parts now. And if you see Anderson Cooper down there, you know, he still has access. That's his
family. He's a Vanderbilt, right?
He's a Vanderbilt. They still have gatherings there. Vanderbilts still live there. So it's kind of...
Really?
Yeah, not there in that house.
On those grounds?
No,
they live there.
Vanderbilt. No.
We're out of time.
Vanderbilt still own that home.
Yeah, they still own the home, but they don't live there today, but they still go back and have Christmas there and stuff. We're out of time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Mary.